right. Well, here we are. To dream again. To dare again. To feel enjoyment and happiness again. Or for the first time. To realize this is living. Be inspired. To see your life as an exciting journey of discovery. With your host of the Inspire Possibility Show, Mark Sussman.
Hi, everybody. This is Mark Sussnell. You are listening to the Inspire Possibility Show, the show that makes the difference, the show that will hopefully inspire you to see opportunities that you never saw before, or perhaps to act on opportunities that are always there. And as you know, I always have somebody that's usually written a book, or somebody that is who I consider a cutting-edge thought leader. And I'm doing something a little different today, in that I'm doing something, I wouldn't call it political as much as I would think about it as historical. And we know what's happening today in Washington with a special prosecutor appointed, Bob Mueller. And a lot of people are looking at, how does this compare to the Nixon era, what was going on there when J. Edgar Hoover passed away? He appointed Patrick Gray as a new FBI director. He passed over Mark Felt. And I have today John O'Connor as my guest. He wrote a book about Mark Felt, the man who brought down the White House. He is the one that broke the story on the identity of Deep Throat, who was the name given to him when Bob Woodward and Bernstein came out with their story. So John O'Connor is our guest. He's a former attorney. He is an attorney. He was in the U.S. Attorney's Office back in those times. Also, Bob Mueller was also in the U.S. Attorney's Office, in the same office that John was in San Francisco. Bob Mueller was in the civil division. John was in the criminal division. So I'm very honored and privileged to have the author of Mark Felt, the man who brought down the White House. It's also a film, and I saw the film, and it's a great film, and John is the co-producer of the film, and I asked him if he'd be my guest and kind of share the whole story. So welcome, John, to the show.
Hey, good afternoon, Mark. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Great.
Fantastic.
I'm looking forward to what we're going to discover. To discover some things that perhaps you haven't already written about. But let's just talk about what I'm curious about. I know we met, and we met last year, and you were telling me that you wrote an article for Vanity Fair disclosing who Mark Felt was. And I know back in that day you were in the San Francisco U.S. Attorney's Office in the criminal division, and that's where you had actually met Bob Mueller. Is that right?
Right. The timing on this is this, Mark. I had started in the U.S. Attorney's Office in January 1974, and in April of 74, the book All the President's Men came out. And I was just obsessed by this Deep Throat character. So I had a lot of time on my hands, I guess. And I like to puzzle over these things. You and I are both really in the same business, trial lawyers, and we were. So this just sort of intrigued me. And being a Justice Department guy, I always thought that Woodward's and Bernstein's sources must have come from the Justice Department. So that's how I got started on this, just trying to puzzle it out simply by reading the book. Interestingly, about the time I had determined that this fellow was Mark Felt, was about the time maybe a little bit before that, Bob Mueller and I had become friendly, and he had just joined the office. And so as it turns out, I take credit for Bob because I assigned him his first criminal cases. He had civil cases, and so that's kind of my claim to fame. I'm kind of my brush with greatness here, you know?
All right. Because I know when we first talked, this was the year before the election. And so,
right.
And you had mentioned that, but I didn't really pay that much attention to that information because Bob Mueller wasn't necessarily a big name at the time. And so you start your investigation in terms of who Mark Felt was. And so how did you kind of get from there all the way to writing this article for Vanity Fair?
Well, what I did was, as I say, I pretty much was convinced. I was very convinced of who Deep Throat was back in, I would say, late 1976. And then at that point, one of the reasons I assigned Bob my criminal cases is I was sort of preparing to go to a big law firm in San Francisco, one of the big ones, and so I had to get more civil cases under my belt before I did so. And I was getting married. I knew I was going to start raising a family, and I needed to get a private job. So really at that point, I sort of forgot all about Deep Throat. Every time the question would come up in an article that I would read, I would say, well, that's Felt. So I don't understand why these people don't know it, but it's Mark Felt. I didn't think anybody would pay attention to me. Then lo and behold, 25 years later.
Let me just ask you that question. What was, I mean, you sound real definite, real adamant. What was the crucial information that gave you that conviction?
Well, you know, it's almost a redundant deal. I mean, there were probably 60 or 70 things I could point to, but let me give you a couple that probably would stand out among your audience here. In the book and the movie, Woodward and Bernstein make a big deal about their so-called loan mistake, and that was a mistake in which they printed falsely that Hugh Sloan, the treasurer for the Republican National Committee, had testified that H.R. Haldeman, Nixon's chief of staff, controlled a certain slush fund. And then it turns out that he didn't so testify to the grand jury, and Nixon and everyone made a big deal about the fact that the Post was reckless, and it was very embarrassing, and so forth and so on, and Woodward and Bernstein hung their heads in shame and so forth. And in that episode, Deep Throat refused to confirm that Sloan had so testified. Now, you and I would know this, Mark, because we're both familiar with the criminal process. Most people may not. But they were asking Deep Throat to confirm not whether Haldeman actually controlled the slush fund. He did. He was one of the five signatories. But not that, but whether there was testimony before the grand jury that he controlled the slush fund. Now, as you know and I know, but most people don't, grand jury testimony is confidential by law. It's a felony to reveal it. So this was, of course, a day after the testimony. So obviously the reporters were going to somebody who would have had access to the testimony, to the transcript, and that would be either a high FBI official or a high justice official, one of the prosecutors. Now, for various reasons, I knew it wasn't a prosecutor, and because everyone knew thought that there was a leaker over at the FBI, all the top FBI officials got transferred at some point out of Washington, D.C. to outlying areas as punishment. We go through that in the movie a bit. But the only guy that Patrick Gray did not suspect, Patrick Gray was the head of the FBI loyal to Nixon, the only guy that Patrick Gray did not suspect of leaking was Mark Felt. So he did not get transferred. So if the fellow they were looking to was a high official in the FBI, there's only one person it could have been. That's Mark Felt. Now I can go through six or seven other exercises where you point directly to Mark Felt, and then maybe, as I say, many, many others that circumstantially
right.
point that way. But that's
so what
the
I
kind of
do,
exercise I did. Yeah.
Yeah. So what I want to do is I want to get the whole story in terms of
sure.
how it went. So you have this idea, and meanwhile your life goes on. You're a successful attorney in a big firm in San Francisco, and you're still something's going on that you're got this thing where you got I got to find. You're obsessed with this idea. So what was going on there with wanting to kind of dig deeper?
Well, you know, I didn't really so much want to dig deeper until almost 25 years to the day later. My daughter comes home with her Stanford friends for a feed, and you know, when I have a lot of beer out, and Jan cooks a lot of food for them, and it's the end of the month, they've run out of money, and so they come up to our house to,
right, exactly.
to have a feast. So at that point, I started telling stories about my father being a terrible spy for the FBI. My father had been an FBI agent for a few years during the war, and these kids had all been abroad. A lot of them had spent their semester abroad in South America. So I was telling them about my father's adventures in South America when one of the young fellows across the table said, "Well, you know, Big John, my grandfather was in the FBI. Maybe your dad knew him." And I said, "Oh yeah, what's his name?" And the young man said,
"Wow,
maybe you've heard him. His name's Mark Felt."
Oh my God!
So you can imagine
wow.
my reaction. You know, this is something that had occupied a couple years of my life as just sort of a hobby, but nonetheless, it was something I obsessed over. And I
what year is this?
This is now 2002, April 2002. And Mark, I couldn't help but notice the lead into your show where you said, you know, you talked about taking advantage of opportunities or possibilities. At that point, after a bit, I went up and talked to Mark. I asked Nick if I could come up and talk to his grandfather, and he called
and
me back
then,
that.
He's living with his daughter in Santa Rosa, which is in Northern California.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Mark is I should say that the young man lived in Nick Jones lived in Santa Rosa. His grandfather lived there with his mother. And so I asked to come up and see him. We got along very well. I talked to Mark and basically tried to push all the buttons I knew that I could push as to why what he did was essentially patriotic and pro-law enforcement, and that he needn't be ashamed of what he did. Now, he never admitted it, at least at the beginning. He did not admit he was Deep Throat, but his family could see from his reaction to me how much, how he really was not denying it, that he seemed to be captivated
right.
by my description of the
right.
heroism of the
right.
fellow Deep Throat.
But some of the criticism of this whole story is that he had dementia at the time. Is that right?
Well, yeah, he has, and people mix up sort of what dementia is. I mean, he had dementia. He had normal senile dementia or old age dementia,
uh-huh.
meaning he didn't have much of a memory and had no memory of the details of being Deep Throat,
right.
but hardwired into his psyche the same way a person with dementia knows his name and knows who her husband is, just can't remember, you know, what date something occurred, or forgets when, Britain was invaded. But nonetheless, he had all his wits about him, and the family respected him for his decision-making ability, and the fellow knew he was Deep Throat. And so that was very, very clear. Now, did he remember what garage he went to? No. Did he remember exactly how he did it? No. But that's what made it, to me, extremely authentic when he and when he finally admitted it. He did not want to admit it and was in control of himself in the sense that, he was being very FBI-like with me, you know, and not
right.
exactly showing his hand. Interestingly,
like that young man's grandfather, right?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, and it's interesting to sort of show him my credentials as a law enforcement guy. I had not only told him I was an assistant U.S. attorney, but also that I knew Bob Mueller, who at the time had been appointed head of the FBI, and that my father's partner was Bill Ruckelshaus, who was actually temporary head of the FBI when Mark was there after Gray had to resign in disgrace. So I sort of dropped those names to him and let him know that I was a law enforcement type of guy, and told him how all the young people in the Department of Justice thought that this guy Deep Throat was a hero. So I got him thinking that way, and it was a real struggle for him. I got to say this. Many older folks live with their secrets, their dark secrets, and it's really a burden in many cases for them to carry them around. And this was an example of a tremendous burden on Mark's psyche. And I thought that when we finally got him to tell us who he was, and then finally, after several years, we finally got a publisher to believe us, and that revelation really took a burden off him, and we think he probably lived a couple years more than he otherwise would have.
Wow.
He was so delighted and so sort of carefree after that.
And the
really
publisher, that was his first book, A G-Man's. Was that the book that you're talking about, the publisher?
The real publication was the article in Vanity Fair in May of 2005.
Okay.
Now, it took us several years to find a publisher willing to believe that Mark was Deep Throat. I could go through all the – so I would go around. I had contracts signed that involved a predicate of the publisher verifying that it was Deep Throat. And it's very interesting because we talk about, taking advantage of opportunities. There were some publishers to whom I handed this story on a silver platter, and they wouldn't take it. They were just afraid. It was very interesting. I worked with one big publisher for 6 months trying to explain everything about how this is proven to a fare thee well. And I gave them the kind of proofs that I gave you earlier and went through it at length, and it's very interesting that these folks could not pull the trigger, and finally I got Vanity Fair to do it, and I got to admire their guts for doing it. It shouldn't have been a gutsy thing, but for these publishers it was. So that was a very interesting lesson in the herd mentality of journalism. Once the Vanity Fair published the story, of course, every book publisher in the world accepted that it was okay to publish something. But you have to have somebody else do it first. So
and then that led to what book? That led to the G-Man's Tale?
That led to G-Man's Life. G-Man's Life. Yeah. We published G-Man's Life a year later and signed a contract. Originally, it was going to be Tom Hanks was going to do the movie and for Universal. And we almost did it with Tom Hanks, and it would have been a wonderful movie because, if for nothing else, we would have had a full studio support behind us, and it's too bad that didn't happen. Yeah.
Right. Well, yeah. I love Liam Neeson. I mean, I bought into his whole way he did it, and so this leads to the movie. You're the co-producer. And I guess what we had talked about before.
And let me interrupt you there, Mark. Let me interrupt before we go further. I don't want to say I don't think Tom Hanks would have been a better Deep Throat than Liam Neeson. I think Liam Neeson was born for the part. I thought he was fantastic.
He's fabulous.
My only point is that if originally our contract was with Universal and Tom Hanks, and so Universal would have put a whole lot of money into promoting the movie and distributing it.
Right, and who was the eventual producer? What was?
Well, Ridley Scott was the nominal producer, but he farmed it out to some other money people, and the other money people who produced it were the main money producers. Were hoping that the film would sell by itself without a lot of promotion, and you know that rarely happens. So it'll be a very good film. It's distributed. It's been distributed as an art house type movie, you know, and it's only been on 300 or 400 screens. It's the audience reviews have been over the moon. I mean, they're 85% liking, but which I can't figure out because the Rotten Tomatoes was much lower, but our surveys have been just fantastic. But so anyway, it's coming out on Netflix in January, so that'll be the DVD is for sale on Amazon.
My only disappointment about seeing the movie was I didn't see it with you. We talked about it.
It would have been fun.
You know.
Yeah.
I know, and I was away.
Yeah, would have been a blast.
I know. So what I want to come back to is I talked about comparing. I'm keeping track of our time here, of comparing what was going on in the Nixon era with today. I mean, we had the FBI director fired, right, by the president.
Yep.
That happened with Nixon. And how do you see? I know the big a lot of people I talked to today are kind of freaked out about, you know, what's going on in Washington. And I have the perspective of the Nixon era, and I think the Nixon era was much more dangerous because I saw them as super smart people. They're veteran politicians, and Nixon,
yeah,
you know, he was a congressman and vice president for 8 years. I mean, they were very savvy in the way government worked, and they had people that are very loyal to him. And he was really a politician more than a businessman. So what is your take on that? How do you compare in the fact, again, in both administrations, the president fires the FBI director? So, and how do you see Comey's role or somebody in this administration, because there are a lot of leaks, kind of similar to Mark Felt?
Yeah, here's the way I'd do it here, Mark. First of all, when Nixon fired the special prosecutor, Patrick Gray, the head of the FBI, resigned in disgrace because he tried to yield too much to the pressures of the president. So he had to resign in disgrace because he had destroyed some documents. Nixon fired the special prosecutor, which here's the way I would compare those events today. And there's enough for both sides of the aisle to seize on here, like so many things today, where everybody can seize their facts. And let me talk about today, what with the Trump administration. I think the president blundered more than anything else, and he fired Comey because actually Comey was taking the correct and principled position. That is to say, look, I'm not going to give you my personal loyalty. I'm just going to give you my honest loyalty. I'm going to be an honest guy. And no, it's not right for me to announce to the public that you're not being investigated for the Russian collusion, that we don't consider you a suspect. That's what President Trump wanted him to do. He didn't do it. So I see Comey is acting in an absolutely principled way and a way that Mark Felt would approve of in the Trump administration. Now, that said, when you go back to the Obama administration, Comey was doing all the things that Mark Felt was more like Patrick Gray. He was doing the things that Mark Felt disapproved of. He was getting a little bit too close to his president, or at least the presidential contender, Hillary Clinton, and was probably playing a little footsie there. I mean, it was not his role to be announcing charging decisions. That's for the Justice Department. He was really trying to take one for the team and take the pressure off Loretta Lynch. I understand why he was doing it. But once you do that, now he does that. And I understand why he did it, and everybody who's in the business knows why he did it. But now he's in the Trump administration. Now Trump wants him to do the same thing. He wants him to have a press conference and exonerate him, Trump. Well, you know, guess what? That would be the wrong thing to do, what Trump wanted him to do. But he'd already done the wrong thing in the last administration. So here we are now. every night, depending upon which channel you go to, and I watch them all, somebody
right.
is railing on the independence of the special prosecutor. Either there's an accusation that the White House is, as in Watergate, impinging upon that independence, or there is, on Fox News, people are railing about how the Justice Department was too much in the pocket, had been, you know, influenced too much by Hillary Clinton and her needs. So we see these issues now popping up tremendously every night, and it's too bad, because there's now there truly is a loss of confidence in the top part of the Bureau, and it's a shame. And that's precisely what Mark Felt didn't want. The reason he went to the garage with Woodward is so that no one could accuse the FBI of whitewashing Watergate. That was his motive. He didn't really want to get Nixon. He was not out to get him. He was out to do a full and fair investigation and let the chips fall where they may. And today he would be rolling over in his grave at this stuff, getting on, watching TV every night and watching people excoriate the FBI. That's really what he sought to avoid. And it has a lot of parallels today. It's just not quite on all fours, but the issues
right.
are the same. You know, so I hope that makes sense to you, Mark.
Well, it's definitely, you know, we've talked before, and I knew it wasn't going to be a short answer.
yeah. I don't give a lot of short answers.
So I'm not surprised.
Yeah, as my wife will tell you, I don't give a lot of short answers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's really how you kind of. Any other parallels that you see between this administration and just what's going on a bigger scale?
Well, here's the
parallel. I mean, in a way, I'm looking
at
this as not as much, like I said, as political, as much as historical. To kind of, because I think that's what we do. We learn by history, and sometimes some things repeat themselves. And I'm just.
Yes.
With the relationship of the FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office and the President, do you see, again, these what are the parallels?
Well, here's a big parallel, a potential parallel. If, in fact, Bob Mueller gets fired, it's going to ignite the same kind of firestorm that was ignited during the Saturday Night Massacre in October of 73, I'm going to say, October of 70, or maybe, no,
it was
I'm, 73, I'm sorry.
I think, yeah.
Maybe I'm
I think it was 73, yeah.
73, okay. But it's going to ignite the same kind of firestorm as the Saturday Night Massacre, and it will be devastating if the Trump administration tries to do that. So that's why I think he's got able criminal counsel, and they're being very nice to Bob Mueller and complimentary and respectful, in spite of the allegations by many that there's favoritism there. So that, to me, is a big parallel. And historically, you've hit on a very big point, because historically, the Justice Department, the FBI especially, is supposed to be independent in the sense that they're independent fact finders. But on the other hand, structurally, you can't have somebody out there that's not accountable. The FBI is under the Attorney General, who's under the President. So you have this built-in, I don't want to say conflict, it's a tension. The Founding Fathers put a lot of tensions in our system. And this is one of those tensions, you know, between political influence and sort of that straightforward, let's have Lady Justice not peek out from her blinds. You know, so that's what we've got going on here, and it's fascinating to me. I mean, I think
it is.
This is a very, very interesting time in our history, and I hope everything goes well. Let's put it that way. I just don't want it to devolve into something that is not good for all of us.
Well, John, we're running out of time. It went so fast. Yes. It did. It went so fast. And so thanks for your willingness to have this conversation. I think was great. And, We'll see how things keep evolving, and I know that we, you know, have certain, you know, backgrounds that are somewhat similar, a lot different too.
Yeah.
But some similarity, and I just think this was a fascinating conversation, and I know one quick question. What is inspiring you about what's going on today? We got 20, this is a 15-second answer.
What, just basically what's inspiring me is the opportunity to reaffirm our system. And I hope we have the opportunity here to come out of this reaffirming sort of a good government platform. And that's why I enjoy talking to you about this, Mark, because you do understand sort of the issues that are here. I know you and I have talked about this before, and I think this is like a crisis. It can be an opportunity. It can be danger. And I just hope everything can turn out well and everybody's satisfied that the system worked. That's really what it's about, so that the public has confidence in our systems. That's really what it's about now.
So, well, thank you, John O'Connor.
It's been fun here,
and,
Mark. Yeah,
yeah,
thank
I know.
You for
and hey,
me.
See the film, everybody. When it's you don't can't get it in the theater right now, see it when it comes out on Netflix. I saw it. I was riveted to my seat. And when it comes out again, we can watch it together, John, on Netflix.
Yeah, love to do it.
Unless you have your own
right,
copy
Mark.
At your house.
Well, I've ordered one. Maybe you can come over. We can drink some coffee over there. All right.
All right. Sounds great.
All right. Take care.
Okay.
All right. See you now.
Thank you, everybody. Next week, again, another fascinating person is going to be joining us.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to inspirepossibility.com and click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark. Or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine.